Welcome to all of you here on the African continent and around the world. This is Let's Talk About Health in Africa, and we are coming to you from the HSS podcast with me, Lenias Wenda. Today on Let's Talk About Health in Africa, we are continuing the Neglected Infectious Diseases series, or as they are commonly known, the Neglected Tropical Disease series, and how they affect more than 1.7 billion people on this planet, most of them in the Africa region. Specifically, we are looking at lymphatic filariasis, also known as elephantiasis, a parasitic infection that is spread by mosquitoes which carry the parasite and spread it when it bites the next person. This infection affects the immune system and it basically impairs the lymphatic system, which leads to the abnormal enlargement of body parts, causing pain, severe disability, and social stigma. Like many neglected tropical diseases, lymphatic filariasis is preventable and treatable using medications that kill the parasite. According to the World Health Organization, 859 million people in 50 countries worldwide are at risk and require preventive chemotherapy to stop the spread of the parasite. Dr. Didier Bakajika, a WHO technical officer on neglected tropical diseases, whose work focuses on onchocerciasis and lymphatic filariasis, is here to talk to us about lymphatic filariasis and how big a burden it is on the African continent. Dr. Didier Bakajika, welcome to Let's Talk About Health in Africa on the HSS podcast. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you very much, Lenias. It's also a pleasure for me to be with you.
Wonderful. So let's begin by talking about the burden of lymphatic filariasis in Africa. But first, can you just explain to us what is lymphatic filariasis?
Thank you very much, Lenias. Lymphatic filariasis, also known as elephantiasis, it's a vector-borne parasitic disease caused by three filarial worms that are transmitted by mosquitoes. And among the three filarial worms, we have Wuchereria bancrofti, Brugia malayi, and Brugia timori.
Yes, yes. So basically, it's a bite of a mosquito that actually, you know, leads to people catching the parasite. Now, how much time does it take from the point when one gets that bite with the infected mosquito and you get the parasite to the point when you start to actually experience problems that indicate that you have the infection?
Okay, this is a very interesting question. Generally, it takes 4 to 12 months after infection to see the sign of the infection. But for lymphatic filariasis, you need to be exposed as long as possible and get bitten by the mosquito. But the mosquito must be infected, must have the parasite to be able to transmit it to you when biting. And then the parasite is going to go through a cycle in your body and then going to develop to adult worms. But also, this is not, the same for everybody. Some people may take longer to see the sign of the disease after being exposed. So, but generally it takes, as I said earlier, 4 to 12 months. But in other people, it may take years after being exposed to see the sign of the disease.
Yeah, so really variation depending on the person and how it's affecting your immune system, specifically how quickly you can start to experience symptoms. Now, obviously, this is a big problem affecting many of our communities across the continent. What should we do in our own families and our communities to make sure that we are safe from catching the parasite in the first place?
Very interesting question. We have some measures to be followed so that we can prevent ourselves to cut the infection. As I said earlier, the parasite is transmitted by an infected mosquito. And to prevent ourselves to get the infection, we should avoid being in contact with the vector. That's number one. Number two, we should avoid being in a high risk areas where we have generally the vectors transmitting the parasites. So these are some of the measures that one should follow to avoid getting the infection at the individual level.
Yes, so to avoid coming in contact with the vector itself, are we talking here about, you know, sleeping under insecticide-treated nets? And how do you avoid being in areas that has, you know, a lot of the mosquitoes? I'm from Zimbabwe, and in Zimbabwe we have, for tsetse fly, for example, there are areas that have been declared unfit for human habitation. Do you have something, has something similar been done for lymphatic filariasis to avoid, to minimize that contact, or are there other ways of preventing oneself from being in the high-burden areas?
We have the vector transmitting the parasites, mainly, mosquitoes, but within that group, we have different, if I can simplify the term, types. We have like Anopheles transmitting the parasite of malaria. We have Culex, we have Aedes, and we have Mansoni. And these are mosquitoes. And as you clearly mentioned, sleeping under a long-lasting treated bed net is one of the measures that one can use to avoid being exposed and being bitten by the mosquito. We can also use some repellent. These are some, let's say, products when applied on the body are going to avoid you being in contact, avoid the vector being in contact with you. But as I said, these are some of the measures that one can use at an individual level. But as we know, mosquitoes are everywhere. Sometimes it's very difficult to avoid them. So, but if possible, one can avoid being in contact, being bitten by mosquitoes, being bitten by the vector that have the parasites that causes the infection.
Very clear. Now, who are the most affected groups? Does it affect any particular group more than others? You know, women, children, men, or is everyone equally affected?
Equally affected, I can say, because when you are exposed and depending on your immune system, you may develop the signs of the disease. I saw myself, both adults, children, with signs of the disease. I was shocked in one of my trips in Madagascar to see a little girl aged 5 years to have the lymphedema. And when talking to the parents, I was informed that that started when she turned 2 years. So with that little girl, it didn't take long. So within 3 years, she was able to have a big leg characteristic of lymphedema. So we see also adults with the youth with lymphedema, with hydrocele in males. So there's no specific age group. There's no specific group exposed. The only thing is when you are exposed and depending on your immune system, you may develop the signs of the infection.
Then you talk about this little girl you saw in Madagascar who was showing quite advanced symptoms of the disease. And obviously 2 years is very young. Could it be that she got it, you know, in the uterus? And in Africa, obviously, we have a very large population of people who are immunocompromised, people with HIV, large HIV positive population. How does that affect the disease and its manifestation?
I don't think there's a relation between being immunocompromised and having, I'd say, the disease. There's no relationship, proven relationship. The only thing is you to be exposed. And depending on your immune system, you are going to develop rapidly some of the signs of the disease. So for that little girl, I cannot say that she was exposed and she got it when she was in the uterus. I spoke to the father. When did he see the first sign of the disease in her daughter? And he told me that he noticed that when she was 2. So which means that she was exposed even being a baby and living in a very endemic malaria area. So that little girl was exposed and she was beaten several times and she was beaten by infected mosquitoes. And then she got the parasites and rapidly she developed the signs of the disease. But as I said earlier, depending on your immune system, you can rapidly develop the signs, but it can also take years for someone to see the signs of the infection, the sign of the disease.
Let's say, you know, for people who take a shorter time, like this little girl to show symptoms, is that a better thing in terms of actually dealing with the illness itself? You know, like in cancer, the earlier you catch it, the better and the higher the likelihood that you're going to be treated with successful, you know, treatment outcomes. Is this the case with lymphatic filariasis, or is it really more to do with, I mean, how your immune system is reacting, that whether it's caught early or later, it really makes little difference in terms of the outcomes?
For lymphatic filariasis, one thing I would like to let you know, Lenias, the infection can remain asymptomatic for so many years. Even when you are conducting the mapping using the diagnostics that are proposed by WHO or using the blood smear, you can find people with the parasites in their blood. Let's say Wisteria bancrofti, which is the main filarial worm in Africa. But you see most of these people not having a single sign of the disease. So yes, it takes so many years, for someone to develop. I mean, it takes years in some people, it takes months in others, depending on how your body is reacting. But once you have, let's say the signs like lymphedema, there are measures that you should follow as a patient to avoid the progression of the initial stage of lymphedema to an advanced stage of the lymphedema. So yes, there are some measures that can be followed for someone with initial stage of lymphedema to avoid the progression. But for hydrocele, it may take also, some people may have the parasite, but they don't have hydrocele. But when they have hydrocele, so they have to go through the surgery.
Yes. So let's talk about prevention then, detection of lymphatic filariasis and the availability of treatment, especially across the continent. Now, out of all of the people who need to have preventive chemotherapy across the region, what percentage would you say, or how many people are we able to reach with the preventive chemotherapy to make sure that we are able to protect them from catching the parasite in the first place?
Okay, to answer to this question, I'm going to give you an overview of the global and the regional burden of lymphatic filariasis. So globally, the disease is endemic in 72 countries across a WHO region. And in 2020, the population requiring mass drug administration was around 865 million, as you mentioned in the introduction, in 2,207 implementation units. But in Africa, the disease is endemic in 32 countries, and 10 of these 32 countries are co-endemic with other filariasis like loasis. We had in 2020 a population of 339 million people requiring mass drug administration in 1,775 implementation units. That's broadly the burden of lymphatic filariasis in the world and also in the African region. But in terms of prevention, there are strategic interventions that are put in place that have been recommended by WHO so that we can prevent the infection and we can prevent the progression to the disease stage. We have a preventive chemotherapy using different drug regimens, ivermectin alone, ivermectin plus albendazole. We have albendazole twice a year. We have these diethyl carbamazine plus albendazole, and recently the IDA, which is ivermectin, diethyl carbamazine, and albendazole. We have also case management, and we have also vector control interventions that are needed as a strategic intervention, cost strategic intervention recommended by WHO for lymphatic filariasis.
You mentioned the way you would treat or administer the preventive chemotherapy, the type of regimen you would use would depend on other filarial diseases that you have in a particular endemic area. So now all of that requires that you have precise data about where the problem is, how big it is, and how many other, filarial diseases that are present in that population. Now, what comes to mind, thinking about that, having all of this information is the challenge, the perennial challenge that we have on the continent of data, the fact that we are not or do not always systematically gather data about epidemiology of diseases across different countries. And then, of course, there is also the other limitation. In order to gather data, you need to detect those diseases by, performing diagnosis, positive diagnosis. Now, how are you dealing with those challenges in your efforts to really get on top of controlling these filarial illnesses, the problem of data, the problem of adequate diagnostics that are fit for purpose that enables you to detect these things easily at the primary care level where you are seeing the patient who is most affected by this?
Okay, your question has two sets, if I can say so. The challenges in terms of data and the challenges in terms of diagnostics. So yes, we have been able to identify quite a number of challenges working with countries across Africa. And within the ESPEN, which is the Extended Spatial Project for Elimination of NTD, we have a data team. And the data team has been working along with disease-specific technical officers to support countries. Yes, data has been a big problem, and many challenges have been highlighted, like joint application packages received from countries containing important errors or omissions, including unjustified changes in endemicity status, population size, misalignment between endemicity and drug requests, missing of epidemiological data, missing of historical data, weak data management skills, and weak data literacy within national programs. There are many. And the data team, as I said, has been working with countries to address some of these challenges. I'm going to give you some of the supports that we provided with regards to data. We address the data issues by building PC-NTD data repository, forecasting treatment and monitoring and evaluation activities, and produce pre-populated reports to be shared with countries in advance. We have been also able to standardize the review process to facilitate detailed quality control of submitted forms. We have been able to provide online supervision to countries with regard to JAP, and the data team has been able to develop what we call the Joint Application Package Import Tool. We have also been able to train a cohort of data managers who travel to countries and work with programs to improve data quality and availability from 2018 up to 2020. The data team has also been able to create analytical and visualization tools based on more relevant programmatic indicators. And the data team has been able also to increase the availability of thematic maps. We have the ESPEN portal, which is a portal where the data are epidemiological data, mapping data. So working with countries and listening to their challenges, the data team has been able, as I say, to increase the availability of thematic maps and database for guiding programmatic decisions. So, and we are planning in the future to have a kind of ESPEN sub-regional NTD data herb to support countries in overcoming some of the challenges, building their capacities, so that they will be able to handle all the issues related to data and improve the quality of data. So these are some of the challenges related to data and how ESPEN has been working to support countries. There are many. I cannot go in details, but yes, data has been an issue, is an issue. We have started supporting countries. We will continue to support countries, and we have other projects in the pipeline on how to improve data literacy, how to improve data management skills at the country level so that we can have data, strong data with a good quality to inform where and what should be done based on the data we have.
Hopefully, with all of the support that ESPEN is able to provide to countries in terms of collecting more accurate data and enabling them to have the skills and the capacity to actually collect quality data that is dependable. Hopefully this will lead to less neglect, obviously, of the problem, with greater understanding and greater of the demand for treatment, for preventive chemotherapy, and so forth. This is the end of the first part of Let's Talk About Lymphatic Filariasis with Dr. Didier Bakajika at the World Health Organization Africa office in Congo Brazzaville, joining us from Accra, Ghana. Coming up next, the second part of this conversation. Join us as we continue our conversation with Dr. Didier Bakajika, a World Health Organization technical officer who specializes on lymphatic filariasis, which affects 332 million people in 32 countries on the African continent, all of whom require preventive chemotherapy. Now, obviously, countries are probably performing at different levels, some doing better than others in terms of sharing data, understanding their epidemiology, and so forth. According to the WHO, countries like Egypt, Togo, and Malawi have already achieved elimination. What is the biggest factor that sets countries like this apart? What has been the major driving factor for their success, you know, in particular in the countries like this that have already achieved elimination, and in the countries where you are seeing the biggest progress in terms of being able to control and progress towards, you know, sort of elimination of these terrible diseases?
Yes, as you mentioned, three countries in Africa have been validated as free of LF as a public health problem. The first country in sub-Saharan Africa to eliminate lymphatic filariasis was Togo in 2017. Then Egypt in 2018, and Malawi in 2020. Looking at these countries, there were some driving factors. And I can list six driving factors. The first one was early recognition of LF as a public health problem and establishment of the LF program. So the LF program, like in Togo, was created just after the establishment of the Global Alliance for Elimination of Lymphatic Filariasis in 2000. Malawi, for instance, it was quite a bit late, but we could see that the Ministry of Health, the government, was able to recognize the disease as a public health problem and to establish LF program. The second key driving factor was the strong political commitment of top health officials. The Egyptian government provided 75% of resources needed to establish the LF program. The first round of mass drug administration in Malawi in 2008 was funded mainly by the government of Malawi without waiting for an external support. Strong political commitment of top health officials. Number three, integration and collaboration of LF program with other programs. Like in Egypt, there was a strong collaboration between the LF program and the malaria and the leishmaniasis program. In Togo, one could see, for instance, that there was a strong collaboration between the LF program and the malaria program. Number four, a deeper understanding of the entomology and the use of supplemental vector control interventions. I will cite, for instance, Egypt, where the understanding of the vector transmitting the parasite Culex pipiens was discovered by an institution, a research institution, but working with the Ministry of Health and working with the filariasis program, they were able to use that understanding, the knowledge, to implement additional supplemental vector control intervention. In Malawi, for instance, in Togo, the distribution of bed nets and indoor residual sprays contributed very much to the interruption of transmission. Key driving factor number four, the use of multi-sectoral approach played a very instrumental role in the interruption of transmission and the achievement of the elimination of LF as a public health problem. And number six, a strong partnership. For instance, in Malawi, the Liverpool Center for Neglected Tropical Diseases was able to support technically and financially Malawi dealing with lymphatic filariasis. Also in Malawi, the first mapping, the mapping was supported also by the African Program for Onchocerciasis Control. And Togo demonstrated also a strong partnership working with the Global Funds to the Global Fund to fight tuberculosis and malaria. So these are some of the key driving factors that countries put in place to be able to see these achievements. And countries dealing with lymphatic filariasis should learn from those countries so that they will be able, taking also into account their specificity, to be able to interrupt the transmission and to be validated as free of LF as a public health problem.
Indeed, great lessons coming from this group of countries, and those are very important lessons, you know, that you have to start with recognizing that there is a problem and then responding by putting in place a program to address that challenge as a public health challenge, and working across sectors in order to make sure that the efforts at a national level are coordinated, the animal control, the environmental control, the all of the other aspects, the administration of preventive chemotherapy. And it's quite remarkable that the biggest progress is happening where governments are willing to put forward their own funds to say that we recognize this is a problem affecting our people and we want to do something to address that. That's a really important lesson, and great to know that others can look to what has been done in those countries that have done very well, in particular in the countries where they are lagging behind. Talk to us about the progress that you are seeing. Obviously, we have the WHO roadmap towards a neglected tropical disease roadmap towards elimination by 2030. What progress are you seeing? Are we seeing across countries, especially the 32 high burden countries on the continent? And, whether we are going to make it by 2030 in terms of reducing that burden in most countries?
A very interesting question, Lenia. When you look at the situation in 2000, when the Global Program for Elimination of Lymphatic Filariasis was launched and where we are today, I can say that we have made some progresses. At that time, in 2000, we didn't have more than five NTD program, LF program. And today, in all the endemic countries, we have an NTD program, we have an LF program. That's progress number one. Progress number two, we have the completion of the LF mapping. Because you need to map and know where the problem is to be able to go and intervene. So to date, we know where the problem is. We know which districts are endemic and require mass drug administration. Progress number two. Progress number three, when you look at the knowledge of program managers in 2000, and when you look at the knowledge of program managers in 2022, we can see that program managers have been trained on LF program activities. Even if we know that we have the challenge of turnover, people leaving programs and some retiring, but at least the knowledge is there and people were trained. Progress number three. Progress number four, the scaling up of MDAs. When you compare the situation in 2000 and to date, we have scaled MDA. Even if we have some challenges, we have few countries where we are struggling, but there's a scale up of MDA intervention. There's also a scale down. Implementation units that were treated past transmission assessment surveys and stopped MDA. Reporting of LF MMDP activities. It's also a good progress. When you compare the situation in 2000 and to date, you can see that at that time, MMDP was a big issue, even if today it's still an issue, but we have made some progresses. We have countries reporting the number of lymphedema. We have countries reporting the number of hydrocele. We have countries reporting the number people who have provided care. Another progress is the validation of LF as a public health problem in three countries in Africa, two in the WHO African region, one in the East Mediterranean, but within the African continent, so Egypt. So yes, we made progresses, but the road is still long, and we are working towards the 2030 roadmap. Yes, when you look at the 2030 roadmap in terms of milestone, in terms of indicators, yes, we will be able to get some countries in 2023, in 2025, in 2030 being validated as free of LF. Some countries have made tremendous supports. They have stopped MDA in all the implementation units, and they are now working towards the completion of the task three. We have countries like Mali. We have countries like Uganda. So yes, we will be able to make it. But I fully understand that the challenges are not the same in all the countries. Some countries are lagging behind. We need to support them so that they are able at least to meet one of the indicators of the 2030 roadmap with regard to lymphatic filariasis.
Great to hear that we have come a long way and we are making great progress, and that the aspiration towards elimination by 2030 so far, based on the progress that you're seeing across the continent, it looks achievable. How does where we are right now compare to where we were in 2000?
Where we are now compared to where we were in 2000, we have programs, we have implementation units known, we have completion of the mapping, training of programs, scaling down of intervention, reporting of LFMMDP, and in terms even of support, we have now so many international agencies, NGOs, stakeholders willing to support, which was not the case in 2000. That also is a great opportunity to support countries meeting the 2030 NTD roadmap. Yes, in terms of progresses, we made progresses, but we have to work harder so that those countries that are lagging behind, depending on their specificities, are supported. Not all countries have LOASIS, which is a problem. In those areas, you cannot use ivermectin. You have to use albendazole twice a year. There's a cost on that. We have also political instability, which is impacting the implementation of activities on ground, because when there's a civil war, there's nothing you can do. Yes, we made progresses, and we are there to support WHO and donors and other stakeholders, pharmaceutical companies willing to provide the donation of the drugs, and we have NGOs willing to support, and we have also other sectors ready to support, like the WASH sector, where the WASH is needed. Yes, we made progresses, but we have to work harder so that we meet the 2030 targets highlighted in the NTD roadmap.
What will it take to close the gap that still exists right now?
To close the gap, we need, as I said earlier, strong political commitments. Yes, that political commitment is needed, really needed. Programs should work closely, LF program should work closely with other programs, like the malaria program. As I said, we have the vector, which is the same vector transmitting the parasites for lymphatic filariasis and transmitting also the parasite for malaria. So the LF program should work with the malaria program and with other NTD programs and other control program. We need to move from vertical program to horizontal program, which is extremely important. And when you look at the road NTD roadmap, this is also one of the strategic shifts, moving from a vertical program to a cross-cutting approach. We need to close this gap and achieve elimination, countries should own their program. Number four, we need to increase the mobilization of resources, looking also at domestic resources. And this is also one of the strategic shifts highlighted in the NTD roadmap. We need to, country programs need to build strong partnership. Alone, you cannot do anything. But when working with others, when building your partnership with others, they will come and they will support you, and then you can move forward. So yes, building strong partnership is extremely important. Collaboration with research institutions. As I mentioned earlier, in Egypt was able to put in place a strategic steering committee. And in that committee, they had members from the Ministry of Information, member from the Ministry of Education, member from the Ministry of Religion. They had also researchers. They had also LF experts, part of the strategic steering committee. Yes, programs should collaborate with research institutions if we really want to close the gap and achieve the eliminations. These are some of the action points that are needed by countries, by program, to close the gap and to achieve the elimination. Strong political commitment, collaboration between LF program and other programs, integration where possible, ownership of LF program by countries, increasing resource mobilization, targeting also domestic resources, building strong partnership, collaboration with research institutions.
Obviously, there are so many aspects to this, but what is great from listening to you is the fact that, you know, what you are demonstrating in the countries where you are having success is that it is possible to eliminate this challenge of lymphatic filariasis, and it starts with the leadership of the country, owning the problem, recognizing the problem, and being ready to commit resources and take action, working with others across different sectors, leveraging partnerships and scaling up mass drug administration, which requires that we have enough data, we understand our disease and where it is and how much of it there is, and diagnosing and understanding the demand of what's needed. Dr. Didier Bakajika, the World Health Organization Technical Officer for Neglected Tropical Diseases, whose work focuses on onchocerciasis and lymphatic filariasis at the World Health Organization Africa office in Congo Brazzaville. Thank you so much for joining us on Let's Talk About Health in Africa. It's been a pleasure to have you on.
Yes, it was a solid pleasure for me, and thank you for inviting me.
That was Dr. Didier Bakajika, a World Health Organization Technical Officer for Neglected Tropical Diseases, whose work focuses on onchocerciasis and lymphatic filariasis at the World Health Organization Africa office in Congo Brazzaville. He was joining us from Accra in Ghana, and he talked about the gap between countries which are doing well, like Egypt, Togo, and Malawi, which have already achieved elimination of elephantiasis, and those that haven't, and what it will take to eliminate this dreadful disease.